Well, brethren, this is the last day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread for 2025. And it's a real treat that the Northwest Arkansas and the Springfield, Missouri congregation can share this day together. Now, we've heard a lot about God's mighty process of freeing Israel from captivity to Egypt. God always has a purpose for everything he does. I've always used the expression, when God throws a stone, he hits more than just one bird. Well, let's look at some reasons for this feast. We know that this feast is a memorial, a celebration of Israel's release from the bondage in Egypt. We know it's also symbolic of God's plan of salvation, whereby all mankind can be freed from the bondage of sin. We saw how God orchestrated the urgency of the events such that the Israelites had no time to prepare their normal leavened bread prior to their departure, and were forced thereby, therefore, to rely on unleavened bread for their sustenance, Exodus 12:33-34. Now, this is an extremely significant factor to remember. We also know that leaven is used as a symbol of sin because it puffs up the dough, just as pride puffs up and dangerously exaggerates one's self-worth. Sadly, pride may just be the underlying basis for most, if not all, sin. This feast became symbolic of getting sin out of our lives, 1 Corinthians 5:6-8. But it's also symbolic of getting our lives out of sin. Christ was crucified and died on Passover day and placed in the tomb just prior to sunset, which ushered in the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. God the Father then resurrected him just as sunset neared, after having completed his third day of entombment, which then began the fourth day of unleavened bread. His resurrection completed the path to God's plan of salvation, whereby mankind can be freed from the bondage of sin, and that is a major event of this feast. There is an underlying theme in all of this which we must never overlook nor minimize. It is the underlying reason why we eat unleavened bread. Our sermonette topic today is because of what he does. Let's turn to Exodus 13. We're going to read verses 3, 5, and 8 through 9. Exodus 13. You've heard this verse read many times. And Moses said to the people, "Remember this day in which you went out of Egypt, out of the house of bondage, for by strength of hand the Lord brought you out of this place. No leavened bread shall be eaten," and then verse 5, "and it shall be when the Lord brings you into the land of the Canaanites." Verse number 8, "and you shall tell your son in that day," referring to this feast, "saying, this is done," referring to eating unleavened bread, "because of what the Lord did for me when I came up from Egypt. It shall be a sign to you on your hand and as a memorial between your eyes, that the Lord's law may be in your mouth, for with a strong hand the Lord has brought you out of Egypt." If you continue on in this chapter, you'll read about four more times specifically about what God did, what he did by the strength of his hand, his might. God had two major purposes in salvaging Israel from Egypt. The first was to set them apart and to be able to continue the creation of his own special people, his holy spiritual family, because God is a creator. He's the greatest creator ever, and he's always creating. Man invents things and takes great glory in his inventions. But think about it. All of man's fabulous inventions are merely using the science and the materials that God had already created. From making fire to atomic energy, man created nothing. Man merely discovered what God had already created. Actually, that may have been what Solomon was referring to when he said, "Nothing is new under the sun." Ecclesiastes 1:9. I've told the story before to the Springfield congregation, which I'll repeat here for the benefit of our brethren from the Arkansas congregation. You see, it seems one day, a long time ago, Satan approached God, and he said arrogantly, challenged him arrogantly, and said, "Hey, you know that man you created? You know the one that's given you all the trouble? Well, you know, that was no really big deal. I could do the same thing." And God said, "Really?" And Satan replied, "Sure, nothing to it." And God says, "Well, okay, show me." Well, Satan, he was right at it. He reached down, grabbed himself a big old hunk of dirt. And God says, "Ho, ho, ho, stop right there. Buddy, that's my dirt. You go find your own dirt." God is the only true creator. He's doing the same thing today that he was doing when he freed Israel. He's trying to create spiritual people, holy people, to be set apart for his spiritual family. God is calling out. He's setting apart. And that's the first step in his sanctification process. He called Israel out of Egypt and then made that possible through his might for the explicit purpose of setting them apart to be his own special people. Likewise, he called each of us out of this world. And by his might, he set us apart. And if we allow it, he will develop us spiritually to be his own special people, his holy family. Let's turn to 1 Corinthians. We're going to read verses, 1 Corinthians 1. We're going to read verses 26 and 30 through 31. 1 Corinthians 26. Our 1 Corinthians 1, 26. And you've all heard this verse. "For you see your calling, brethren, that not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, and not many noble are called." Now, to paraphrase Barnes' notes, Paul is saying in verse 26 here that regardless of any fleshly attributes, we don't come equipped with the ability within ourselves to be what God requires us to be spiritually. Verse 30, "But of him you're in Christ, who became for us wisdom from God and righteousness and sanctification and redemption." Of him, that's God the Father. And again, it is because of what he does and did for us. It is because of his mighty work of spiritual creation through Jesus Christ that we have all the riches of salvation available to us. Wisdom is understanding and knowing what to do with knowledge. God enabled Jesus Christ to bring to mankind God the Father's wisdom. It's what he did for us. And Jesus Christ brought the whole package. Righteousness, which is obedience to God the Father's truths, his word, which Christ, as the word in the Old Testament, brought to mankind. Then in the New Testament, he not only brought it, but he clarified it and personally demonstrated how to live it perfectly. Sanctification, the first step of which is being called out by God the Father, set apart for his holy purpose, and then being made holy through obedience to God the Father's revealed truths, which is referred to as the conversion process. Redemption, the conclusion of God the Father's spiritual creation, which is only possible through the saving grace offered by Jesus Christ, whose life, death, and resurrection perfectly demonstrated to mankind God the Father's whole package of spiritual creation, thus revealing his mighty wisdom. Verse 31, "That it is written, he who glories, let him glory in the Lord." It is because of what God the Father and Jesus Christ have done for us that we have all the riches of salvation available to us. That is why no flesh can glory, because we owe it all to them. Therefore, if we glory in any of it, then we must glory in the Lord because of what he did. God the Father's spiritual creation doesn't just happen overnight. As awesome and as mighty as he is, he still has to contend with the free will that he purposely gave to mankind, to each one of us. We read repeatedly in the Old Testament of God's utter frustration with the Israelites and their refusal to embrace him and trust him through obedience to his word. Even after repeatedly having witnessed his miraculous power used on their behalf. We're no different. Our spiritual growth occurs only through our continual reverent obedience to his word, his truths. This is yet another reason why unleavened bread is so integral to this feast. And in my opinion, no doubt the underlying reason as to why God named it the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Sadly, the Israelites, for the most part, did not comprehend the depth of God's use of leaven and unleavened. We read in the New Testament where Jesus and others clarified God the Father's intended meaning. Let's turn to Matthew 16. Matthew 16. We're going to read verses 6 and then 11 through 12. Matthew 16, verse 6. Jesus says, "Take heed and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees." Well, the disciples didn't grasp his meaning, so he clarified it. "How is it you don't understand that I did not speak to you about bread?" Then they understood that he did not tell them to beware of the leaven of the bread, but of the doctrine of the Pharisees and Sadducees. Jesus used leaven as a metaphor to teach this extremely valuable principle, thereby instructing his disciples, which includes us, to be extremely on guard against any false doctrine. False doctrine is contrary to God's truths and is sin, symbolically represented here by leavened bread. Let's turn to 1 Corinthians 5:8. 1 Corinthians 5:8. You've all heard this verse. "Therefore, let us keep the feast." That's the Feast of Unleavened Bread. "Not with old leaven, nor with the leaven of malice or wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth." Paul here describes unleavened bread as being symbolic of God's truth. And we should take in his truths with sincerity, just as we sincerely desire physical food. Now we see yet another aspect of the symbolism of why God commanded us to eat only unleavened bread during this holy feast. He's telling us that by controlling our free will and feeding daily on his word, his truths, this is how he will be able to create us spiritually. Conversely, feeding on the world's leaven, its falsehoods, its humanistic philosophies, which may on the surface seem, okay, harmless, but if given time, will stunt, if not stop, our spiritual growth. When we feed daily on God's unleavened spiritual truths, we ingest a nutritional spiritual diet which enables us, with the help of God the Father's Holy Spirit, to have the wisdom to discern and reject false doctrines which are a nuisance and an impediment to our spiritual growth. Our physical being sustains and grows on a daily intake of nutritious food, and so does our spiritual being, which is how God is creating his spiritual family. Now, the second part of God's mighty agenda in salvaging Israel from Egypt's clutches was to create witnesses of himself. When Israel finally reached the promised land, it was because of what God did in Egypt, what he did in their crossing of the Red Sea and destroying the mightiest army in the world at that time, what he did in the wilderness in their 40-year timeout period for bad behavior, and what he did in their overwhelming victories on the east side of the Jordan River just prior to crossing and entering into the promised land. All these events were an unbelievable display of his might, his realness, and not just to the Israelites, but also to all the peoples in that part of the world. When the Israelites obeyed God, they made the headlines and so did God. We know this to be true because we read in Joshua 2, 9 through 11, we won't go there, about the account of the two spies who were protected by Rahab when they reconnoitered Jericho just prior to Israel's attack. She acknowledged God's existence, His sovereign authority over heaven and earth, and His mighty power. And she desperately wanted a relationship with God for she and her family. Why? Because the Israelites were obedient to God's will. Brethren, when we're doing our part in the conversion process, which is steadfast obedience to His word, His truths, then He can accomplish His part, which is our spiritual creation through Jesus Christ. And as a byproduct of our ongoing spiritual creation, the world will see our good works, and it is a witness of Him because of what He does.